Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 881. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, wrestling has been the gift that has kept on giving here to us recently, Chris. Last week, it was, not in the best of ways. This week, not in the best of ways, but in a very, very different way.
Very different. I don't know. I think it's all hilarious. You think after everything that happened last week, you're pulling into the quote unquote biggest show of all time. And you think you just put the pettiness aside and just perform and soak it all in. But that's not what's going to happen when Mr. Phillip Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk, is involved.
He always seems to find himself... I guess I had forgotten that it was all in last year, that that the fight happened between him.
It was all out.
Oh, it was all out.
There hasn't been an all in since 2018.
Okay. So, but still, I guess it's almost been a calendar year since his last blow up.
Yeah, well unless you count the minor things that have been building.
Such as with
Jack Perry.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I did not realize that things were escalating before this incident took place. Like, I feel like I got the background information after this happened.
Yeah, the background information being that there was going to be a Jack Perry hook segment, backstage segment, where Jack Perry was going to go through glass. And Jack Perry was insisting it be real glass, and Punk was saying, just use sugar glass, don't be an idiot, or something along those lines. Somehow it got twisted into Jack Perry wanted to intentionally injure himself on the glass in order to get some time off, even though he'd already had time off. It was a whole weird thing.
I completely forgot about the whole time off being a factor in this whole thing. Yeah, that's really weird when you have a scheduled vacation and someone's like, oh yeah, you're doing it for the vacation. Like, huh? Like, I have a vacation.
Just a very weird situation. Very, very, very weird thing for Punk to even stick his nose into. You know, very weird that, you know, the very undercard storyline between one Jack Perry and Hook, you know, needed to escalate to glass hijinks. Just a whole weird thing, but tension going on for weeks, manifesting itself in Jack Perry in the middle of one of the biggest matches of his life in front of 80,000 people, taking that very opportunity to take his dig at CM Punk and saying, look, real glass, cry me a river.
The pettiness overfloweth in AEW.
It really does, and you can see why, as a babyface, there was a rather low ceiling on one Mr. Perry. There's just something not quite likable about him. He's a petty. He seems like he's a petty bitch, and he proved it. And then, well, no one's gonna out petty bitch CM Punk. So, and now we can take this to in a chronological order that we have now become aware of.
Yeah.
As soon as this happens, Punk apparently makes a beeline to Tony Khan in the, we'll just call it the gorilla position, just reams him out. Apparently, the word like a middle schooler who doesn't want to go to school anymore, saying I hate it. Apparently, even used the words I hate it here, I quit, and was essentially threatening to not go out for his match with Samoa Joe. Then, of course, Jack Perry enters the curtain because Tony Khan never thought about this being an issue, of these men's matches being back-to-back. Not even getting into how the next match involves Kenny Omega, the next match after Punk's involves Kenny Omega and Hangman Page.
Tony Khan, not the wisest with his booking decisions.
He has fostered this environment of segregation between Collision people and Dynamite people, all spurned by Brawl Out last year. He's done nothing to actually solve any of the actual problems in this company. And then Punk, the now accepted version of the story, gets in Jack Perry's face, shoves him once, Jack Perry shoves him back. Punk then grabs Jack Perry in a front face last choke. There may have been a punch thrown, but that's not been confirmed. In the scuffle does basically bang into Tony Khan's table, knocking monikers off into him. And the fight is broken up into Samoa Joe, who calms down the situation, calms down CM Punk, and gets him out to the ring.
It was kind of funny. I did feel like when CM Punk came out, that he had a look about him.
Oh, yeah. You could tell, there was just something about him, something just set him off. And he may have arrived to the building in a terrible mood already, because he was apparently also left stranded at the airport. And it may have even been on purpose, because the person who runs the AEW's travel department is a longtime friend of, yes, you guessed it, the Young Bucks. Because it's what everyone who works in a backstage or position at AEW, or behind the scenes position, seems to have some connection to the Young Bucks.
The pettiness overfloweth, even with the travel agents of AEW.
Yes. The person in question has repeatedly over the last several months liked and made passive aggressive comments on numerous punk moments there on Twitter, of course. Because why go on LinkedIn to try and find an actual person, an actual experienced travel agent, when you can just hire one of the Young Bucks buddies?
Oh, well, Tony Khan has a bottom line, and I'm going to say that the Young Bucks buddies probably is not as expensive as a real travel agent.
Yeah, man, that's maybe true. So now we are left with a situation where apparently CM Punk and Jack Perry are both suspended. CM Punk, at this time, I don't know if anything's going to change, will not be make any of the three upcoming dates in Chicago. Dates that were already not selling well to begin with. And now you're going to have an angry audience, the likes of which AEW has never really had, now mind you. This could be an emotional situation. This could be a real eruption of anger and negativity directed at the AEW product. And directed at Tony Khan if he even tries to step
It is really going to be interesting. I mean, they are really going from the highest of highs to, I mean, is there a number out there currently for how many they have? Because they're in the United Center in Chicago, aren't they?
The United Center right now for the pay-per-view is, it's under 10,000. Which in that building is not, it just can't look.
Is good. Yeah, that's half the size, because that's one of the larger arenas.
But then there's Collision in that same building that's apparently under 4,000.
Boy.
And then Wednesday's Dynamite is at the former Sears Center, the original home of All In, which, kick up all of this by putting 10,000 people into that building and selling it out, is currently also at under 4,000. AEW's basically AEW's home.
Oof, man, that has got to be, I know that with WrestleMania, they always do a bigger venue, and then they've got to come back to an arena, so it's always a smaller feel.
Right.
This one hits me a little bit different.
Yeah, no. The arena is always sold out in the week or so after WrestleMania. And WWE's been on an incredibly impressive sellout streak for basically most of the year at this point. Oh. AEW, on the other hand, there are going to be some. They've had a brutal summer at the box office, and the fall is looking worse. And they're not going to have Punk. You know, anyone who bought a ticket to see CM Punk is, number one, going to be disappointed, and number two, any tickets that go on sale, particularly for those Saturday Collision dates. What is Collision? What do you even do with Collision? It's about to be college football season anyway. And without CM Punk, what do you even do with that show?
I don't know. I mean, you still have FTR on there. So you still have the World Tag Team Championships there. I'm trying to think, do they have... What all champions do they have?
I think FTR, I think, like, Chris Statlander it makes... regular appearances, but she I don't think is someone who's like on a side or you know it really matters what show she wrestles on.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's been mainly the tag team championship stuff and CM Punk driving the wagon over on Collision. It feels like this is the end. It feels like there's no coming back from. It just feels like there's just no coming back from this for Punk in AEW.
I can't believe that it really does. Like, even, well, I mean, I guess FTR can still kind of go with the same line if they want to. But at this point, it's just like, oh my god! Like even you've got to realize that your friend is being a problem.
Yeah, no, you just cannot keep having these issues with people and have it not be you. I understand. I know what Jungle Boy, what Jack Perry did, what was on camera in front of people was absolutely unprofessional. But Punk's done the same thing. Punk's taking his shots at Hangman. Punk's taking his shots to the Young Bucks, on television. And then it's like, hey, just rip it on the square, whatever. No, he's done that. And so once again, Punk is a giant hypocrite. He's just a malcontent.
I guess somewhat famous one, I suppose.
Yeah, he pretty much is. I mean, he gets in these situations... where he's not entirely wrong. He's not entirely wrong to be upset.
Oh.
To feel the way he feels. But it just does not need to be a blow-up every time. I mean,
yeah, does not need to turn into a fight every time.
Right. I mean, do you need this money or not? I guess is also the question. It's like, you were living your life and writing comic books and doing some acting and, doing MMA commentary on, low-level shows or what have you, or whatever level you want to credit anything after UFC. You seem like you were enjoying your life, but, bills pile up and, he had good years in WWE, but he also had that a long, drawn-out legal process involving WWE. So you imagine at a certain point he may not have been set for life. So he kind of needed this, but at the same time, did you really need it? Well, then, if you needed it, you probably shouldn't be doing this. Even if you want it, you probably still shouldn't be doing this. There were other options. He could have gone to Japan, basically, New Japan, basically, and wrestled on the big shows, and had the Jericho deal to work on the big shows, and that's it, to scratch that ish. I'm sure he'd make six figures for the year,
Yeah,
six figures for the year, and he might have been happy with it.
It definitely would have been a less stringent schedule than what he's currently dealing with.
Right.
So, I think he could have made that work. He just needs to get over the stuff. And I guess that's part of it too. Like, I don't know if you have to make him promise to not be an asshole. Like,
I think they did. I'm pretty sure that's what this all was about. He may have signed paperwork with those exact words. It's just the environment of AEW is obviously not good for him. Which I guess at least the question. Would a short term WWE return, where he basically had one match with Roman Reigns and it was over, be the right call?
If his main motivation for coming back, and obviously we do not know those, were financial, it would really make a lot of sense. Should he get let go from his AEW contract? To me, if you even just sign the one, one match deal, it would have to be worth it.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it would be like a 3-4 month run, something in that area. Because he's one of the few names, too, that they could bring back. There's credibility there. For Roman Reigns to go up against, and he's also
the Paul Heyman connection.
Yeah,
and Heyman could hope and maybe be the glue that keeps it all together.
Yes. I mean, he always does. So
yeah, I'd put my trust in Paul. I mean, I'm pretty sure Roman Reigns legitimately does not like CM Punk. Because of after the Colt Cabana podcast and the whole make Roman look strong meme. Basically followed Roman Reigns for about 6 or 7 years.
Roman's definitely in a much better position than CM Punk at the current moment.
Oh, he definitely is. Yes. AEW is... I think anyone in the world could have told Tony Khan that running two full-priced pay-per-views on back-to-back weeks was a bad idea. And in hindsight, it's an even worse idea.
Because you're going to have, so long as those two are suspended, two of your bigger names are not on your card.
I read something about how MJF at the press conference said that, he's going on something of a vacation. So will the world champion not even be on All Out? He wouldn't have an opponent to begin with.
Oh.
Because, I guess we can transition into the show right now. And we'll just start with the main event and everything that's surrounding it.
It was a bizarre show.
It was a bizarre show, and it was a very bizarre main event. I know there's some people who really enjoyed it. I did not. Once that first ref bump happened, it just turned into a clusterfuck, in my opinion. That's just the best way to say it.
It was... Anytime there's a second ref bump, it gets pretty eye rolling. No matter
And how they did that second ref bump. Adam Cole accidentally hit the Panama Sunrise on the referee. who apparently he had no time. Think about the physics of the Panama Sunrise and think that, oh, it's just a water movement, man. I'm just carrying him over. There's no way he could have known that was the referee. Bullshit. That's not how that move works.
Yes, you should. When you're landing with their head between your legs, you should at least see their back, and you should at least acknowledge that A, they have a shirt on, B, they have a shirt on that a referee wears. Especially since
to be fair, they were both wearing wearing tank tops, you know, their own shirt. But still, you could tell the difference between a referee. So that was stupid.
Yes.
And I know we repeatedly on this show praise the Bloodline and it's how it has managed its story arcs. But there's a problem with that. Now everyone wants to use wrestling as like an elevated art form with so much emotion involved. And oh my goodness, they're crying during the middle of a match, and they're emotionally conflicted about using dastardly and brutal tactics, and it just got to be too much for me. Whatever happened to good old fashioned hate in wrestling? Whatever happened to good guys versus bad guys?
Well, I didn't even think about that. The fact that, because it's another thing that we've talked about a lot, where everyone in AEW praises cheating to win. And we spent a whole main event with two people not cheating to win. It's such a weird sentiment for a company that, again, they laud it every chance that they get. Hey, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. You know, like, oh, great job attacking that guy before the match. You know, and even Tony Schiavone says it half the time. Like, every now and again, he has some person that he condemns. It's just, yeah, it's a weird story for people to be so invested in AEW, where, again, cheating is omnipresent there. I know that it happens in WWE. It happens in wrestling. It gets used excessively in AEW.
Yeah, it is true. Once again, there AEW has so many narrative flaws. And when it comes to this thing, when their team started to get over 2 months ago, about 2 months ago, I said it. Continuing on with them as a one-on-one match for the show was a bad idea.
No.
I called this one. It was just a bad idea because it's left them with nothing, basically. Adam Cole and MJF are the Ring of Honor tag team champions now. And they're about to get into a feud over those titles with Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. Mike Bennett and Matt Taven are now in the orbit of the world champion, who has no real challengers until they decide to really, you know, have a turn here, I guess. But did they miss their moment for that turn? Should Wembley have ended with on a bigger deal? Yes, you, the hug didn't, you know, pop the crowd and everything. But where do you go from there? Where are we going here? On top of all of AEW's other problems, MJF is now a face. Adam Cole is also still a face. Who's going to challenge MJF for the title at any point?
Roderick Strong? Question mark?
Yeah, that's money. And he's not even the worst of it, because you got Bennett and Taven involved, for goodness sakes. I mean, I guess Cole does still eventually have to turn on him. And you can get some life out of that.
Hopefully,
because right now, this promotion just needs a complete overhaul. You know, for all their bragging about this one accomplishment, you know what? Back in 1992, the WWF ran Wembley Stadium amidst, you know, a downturn that was already happening of their business in the United States. And they had a great night. They had about 80,000 people there. Whoever wants to pull out the receipts and say what show was actually, had more paid attendees or whatever, go ahead. But it was a great night at the box office, regardless.
Right.
And then business kept declining and declining and declining, and they were doing television basically in barns and high school gyms within a year. AEW was very close to doing TV in barns and high school gyms at this point. Domestically.
I definitely think they need to go back to the 10,000 seat arenas. That will help their attendance not look so terrible.
They need to get the college basketball and minor league hockey arenas. Definitely, a smaller building, better acoustics. It'll look better. I think they need to rebuild. And Tony Khan, what they need to do is he's got to stop, the random match generator. He's got to stop having people show up three or four, just disappear for like a month and then come back and say, hey, it's me. He's got to have a core of people who he mix and matches in storylines and angles that leads to matches every single week. There has to be a core unit of wrestlers who at least appear on Dynamite and also appear on Collision, which Collision doesn't really have that problem as much because they got a smaller pool to pick from anyway. But Dynamite needs to have a cool pool of wrestlers who are there every week and their stories, unravel week to week. Really, that's what this needs to be. It's the way WWE does things. And I'm not saying that it's always the best stories, or they're always smoking hot or anything, but if you follow a WWE television over the course of 4 to 8 weeks, you will see the same people every single week in varying segments. They will have a specific feud going on for at least maybe a 4 week period, if not longer. And they'll move on, and they'll be mixed and matched with other people. Then after that, AEW does not do that. AEW will just throw a Ring of Honor tag team title match between Aussie Open and who was it that is threw out there?
Forever. I forget.
Was it Metalik and not Metalik and something Vikingo and what's it?
Yeah, it's Vikingo and someone else. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, just out of nowhere, just to have a good match on TV. You can't be doing that. That's just not the way wrestling television is supposed to work. As I said, pick your core guys and girls, and just have them at least have a talking segment on TV every week, and have stories that have a beginning and middle and an end.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I guess I just think in general, like, AEW goes overboard on everything that's kind of anti-WWE. Like, the appearances from people not in your company. Do I enjoy that, if it happened once a year at Forbidden Door, it would be a lot of fun.
Yes.
It was like a 1 or 2 month build. That would be fun. They like Forbidden Door happens all the time. I mean, I think I got it this past year because I was intrigued by the matchups. But there's definitely a mystique about it that isn't there because of how frequently, like Vikingo's like, oh, hey, we got a AAA guy here again. And hey, we got these people from New Japan again. It's just like, well, the specialness wears off.
Yeah, and of course, and Tony Khan announcing there's going to be a new pay-per-view on October 1st. called Russell Dream in Seattle. That will be a tribute to Antonio Inoki. Now, I'm not going to disrespect the legacy of Antonio Inoki. But it's 2023 in the United States of America. Who really cares? Does enough people really care? Because then that just means more New Japan guys are going to be coming in and, you know, coming in for a few weeks, then they're going to leave, and then AEW has left with no stories again heading into Full Gear. In November, by the way.
I guess I always think about it like, is it a selling point? And that to me, it isn't. Like, I am aware of his history. I'm aware of how large of a figure he is in wrestling. He's in the WWE Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken.
That is true, yes.
So it's not like, hey, the WWE is disrespecting this guy. We need to really show that he was great. It's just like, yeah, we know he's great. Like, okay.
Tony Khan is a message board poster from the 90s and 2000s with a lot of money. It's what he is. And he's just going to put on what he likes.
Yeah. And you always bring your own taste to something that you create and produce. We bring that to a podcast, I would hope.
We do, yeah.
When you have that large of a platform, like, you've got to indulge those fantasies in a more articulate way. Again, if Forbidden Door were like a 2-month program where they just brought those guys over and it led to this Wrestle Dream, you know, oh yeah, you could do like 2-3 months or something. Like, you know, like, it would work better as a chunk, but then what's that other promotion going to do with their talent for 3 months if they're gone for 3 months?
Right, yeah.
You know, like it just doesn't really work in this day and age. And it's, yeah, the fantasy booking thing, I guess I get the heart of it, but yeah, it's just not that appealing, and I think that the crowds in the U.S. show it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. To the crowds, I mean, they still do okay on pay per view, and you know, they still have a core audience that buys all their pay per views, but they're veering out to, you know, one pay per view a month now. At $49.99, what's going to happen with that? If they don't get that streaming deal like WWE has, and they expect people to pay, you know, $50 a month for these shows, those 100,000 to 150,000 numbers are going to go down. Oh. They basically have to. I mean, if All Out breaks 100,000, I don't even know what to think. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about it last week. And I don't know if it was on mic or not, but I have no intention of getting All Out.
No. I mean, apparently it looks like it's going to be an absolute chaotic mess, and so that's almost intriguing, but no, I'm not doing it. No.
No. Like, that's one where, at least with All In, it did have the, hey, we have this many people here.
It was a spectacle. The spectacle and the fear of missing out dragged me in.
And the main event was the main draw, honestly. Like, everything else was just, like, there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but All Out, oh my god, like, I don't care. As much as I will probably enjoy it, but I also am not buying a pay-per-view for Darby Allin versus Luchasaurus.
No, I mean, the biggest match announced so far is Kenny Omega versus Takeshita. And fine, it's at least something with a story behind it that they've been building to, although they've been kind of haphazardly building to, you know, once again, you know, one or the other drops off the face of the earth for a week or two, seemingly, and then they pick the storyline back up. type of situation that needed like I was talking about.
And even Kenny Omega kind of blowing it off. You know, like, he was more like, hey, I'm kind of past the whole Don Callis thing. Like, I'm moving on to bigger and better things, and they haven't really stopped him from moving on to bigger and better things.
No. Kenny and the Young Bucks are still playing the same characters they were when being the Elite was actually over. You know, it's just this laissez-faire, oh, you don't care, you know, we're not going to take anything seriously type of attitude. And when you try to push them in blood feuds, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, it doesn't work. Because it's...
The irony thing, it feels like we're past that. It feels like, we can't take anything seriously. Now, of course, on the other side of the thing, there's so many people in the world that take everything too seriously. But in the context of this, it's just like, you're supposed to be in a fight. You're a fight where someone else is trying to injure you, to hurt, to harm you. You know, and you're not taking it seriously?
Well, and on top of that, at least one of the people involved in this stabbed you in the head with a screwdriver, which has to be pretty painful, in and of itself. And then the other person hung you out to dry in a match, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe so. Yes, I believe that happened, yeah.
So it's just like, you have a lot of reasons to be pissed at these guys, but you're like, nah, you know, okay, whatever. Like, it's such a weird platform for a babyface to go with.
Yeah, it is. Now, if there was a match that would intrigue me the most of what's been set, what plates have already been set for All Out, it would be Orange Cassidy versus Jon Moxley.
Oh.
Which they're even kind of muddying the waters with that, because Orange Cassidy has to defend his championship against Penta, who was his tag team partner at All In on Wednesday on Dynamite. Before he gets to Moxley, who apparently has been guaranteed an international title match for reasons, no matter what happens.
Oh, of course.
Of course, Orange is going to win that one, because obviously Orange Cassidy and Jon Moxley is a match you can sell, but with only 4 days notice, not as much.
I want to see that match. Well, maybe.
I would hope that Mox would play along with a more Orange Cassidy match. But, you know, it's Jon Moxley. He'll probably start bleeding during the referee's instructions.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm just sitting here thinking to myself. I'm like, he's not going to wrestle that kind of a match.
Like, no, I'm tired of him. I'm not as tired of him as Jeremy Mays is, but you know, the grind and poke and stab and, you know, and cheese grater a person's face stuff, it's just not doing it for me anymore. The masochistic, you know, scarring of yourself, it's just. Once again, I'm not as over it as Jeremy is, but I'm definitely over it at this point. I'm over a lot of the blood, and I'm not against blood and wrestling at all, really. Nor am I against, you know, bumps and, you know, and weapons, or when done right and done when it makes sense.
Yeah,
but I could do without barbed wire, thumbtacks,
Legos are in every third match. It seems like I'm like.
The Legos, they didn't even pay attention to the Legos. They just did the Legos. And, like, I swear, there were Legos on the ground, on the floor outside for, like, half a second. And then they went, because AEW's broadcast team did not really know how to shoot that back. That was a problem, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, like they honestly needed one of those things. And I mean, I guess because I can get it on YouTube TV, giving away my provider here. But they had like the NCAA tournament where you could just go to one channel and it had all four screens going on.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they didn't do a multi-view like that.
I mean, they went to a split screen, finally, after about, 10, 15 minutes into the damn thing.
Well.
Too long. I didn't hate it. Once again, Orange Cassidy really was a glue that held that thing together in any way, shape, or form. And Eddie Kingston, I would say,
Oh.
But,
Yeah.
God, I mean, I very few people's stock have dropped with me more than Moxley's has recently. I mean, the guy's Renee needs to get him back into therapy or something. It's like he's replaced alcohol with bloodletting. I probably shouldn't say something like that, but who's actually listening to me? Sorry, I said that, Josh. But it's just it just feels like he's got this weird he's got a fetish for it, and
Oh.
it does not feel healthy.
Yeah, that's why the only thing after I saw the skewer spot, I was just like, Renee Young really loves her husband. Like that's the only thing I could think to myself. Like, how she hasn't gone, dude, like, come on, man. Like, really, we have a kid. I get it. You want to be a tough guy now, but can you just knock some of this shit off? Like, it doesn't need to be a weekly thing.
No, it does not, and I'm, as I said, I'm tired of it. And I say what I said about quote unquote hardcore deathmatch wrestling because what match I really did enjoy was the coffin match. You know what? They mainly use the coffin as a weapon or the coffin as something to throw people onto. It looked like it hurt. It made a cool sound.
Oh.
For those kind of matches, that's all I need.
Oh my God, those were definitely the worst bumps. I mean, they stood out to me way more. 'Cause I mean, you're right. Like the one thing about All In, the two people that I like, Orange Cassidy, like you said, made that 10-man match. 'Cause was that the Stadium Stampede match?
Stampede, yes.
Okay, so yeah. Orange Cassidy made that match, and the fact that he went all blood sport on us was fucking awesome. Yeah, and then Darby Allin, oh my God, that man, I'm just gonna love him while he's still wrestling.
Yeah, no. He's crazy in a good way. He really, he made that thing worse at work, and then, what? Give Sting his props. I really don't know what is motivating that man at this point in his life, but what? I'm not gonna stop him.
Yeah.
He seems like he's actually having a good time. And there were times in Sting's life in wrestling, it did not seem like he was actually having fun. But the 2 times, it's weird. It's like, he had his ups and downs in WCW, of course. He never really fit into WWE. The 2 times it looked like he's having the most fun in wrestling were the Joker Sting stuff in TNA and this run with Darby Allin in AEW.
Yeah, it is one of those bizarre things where I'm like, I don't really want to see Sting in a match, but I'll tell you what, for being 64, he's not embarrassing himself.
No, he really isn't. No, he isn't at all. It's the Tony Khan saying it. It's like it is up to him. How long he wants to do this, and obviously he's only done tag matches this whole time, and
Oh.
he apparently does not have any intention of doing even one last singles match. So tag team matches with Darby will be it. And no, I'll enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, it's been a wild thing. Those two being quite the combination. Did not see that one coming. Although I guess a surfer and a skateboarder should get along, no?
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think of I guess one of the other big things here that's staring me in the eyes from All In, Will Ospreay versus Jericho, Chris Jericho.
You know what? They had a good match. I don't necessarily say I remember much from it, but it was a good match. It wasn't in a Jericho. There wasn't anything where Jericho tried to do something to try and match Ospreay that he shouldn't have tried and failed miserably. It was just a really good match. And the fact that it was a really good singles match that does make it stand out on that card.
It was one that might have been one of the better matches, I guess, just because there weren't a
I would say
whole lot
so.
of shenanigans involved.
No, it was a nice match.
And I think someone on Twitter said it, and I think it made a whole lot of sense. Will Ospreay created a whole lot of movement because Jericho is not about that anymore.
Well, the thing is, Jericho still thinks he can, though.
That is the
A lot of
biggest
time.
problem. But he limited those tendencies in this match, I would say. And then the only other one that I do feel like is definitely leading, that is coming to my mind, that is leading to an all-out match. One would imagine that Saraya versus Hikaru Shida should be a match here at All Out.
I'm not sure what they're gonna do. I think a lot depends on the face in the crowd. One Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks. I mean, because if she's coming in, you might as well just not to change the title again and just put it on her as soon as humanly possible.
It depends upon what type of deal I guess she made.
If
Or
she made a deal at all,
if
if
she
she
did. She could be out there just to
she could sit in
profile.
great seats. Oh, but yeah, that match was all right.
No.
I'm not the biggest Saraya fan, but you know what? In that moment, you might as well. I mean, once again, eight. If all of AEW needs an overhaul, the women's division needs an extra overhaul.
I guess the match itself was okay. I just felt like the Saraya thing was a little forced in a way.
Oh, it was
And I
definitely
think that,
forced.
it's more that whole, I guess you said it since it needed more of an overhaul than the rest of the overhaul in AEW. I guess I just don't feel like they played up that angle of things. Like, they've mentioned it, but it didn't feel like a consistent story. And then they tried to make it a story when they were there. I guess it worked because they were in England and her family came out with her. But it still was like a one of those things that fell flat to me.
I mean, to you personally, yeah. To me personally, to an extent, yeah. I mean, it's just you still see that she is still struggling. She is not in the greatest shape, and now she's the champion. So, which I don't think it's gonna last. It may end it all out. Any number of opponents, she is one of them.
No.
Obviously the Outcast appear to be done.
Oh, yeah, I
Other
guess
than
that was one of those outcomes of this match. 'Cause I mean, they really have transitioned Toni Storm into a weird 1950s gimmick. I'm here
yes.
for it, but it does not seem like there's a reason for it to have happened. Which is kind of bizarre to me. If you're going to do that, at least inform those choices in her segment somehow. And that hasn't been done. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so, and yeah, that is the other thing, I guess, to go back to kind of your main point that started this. Saraya's just, she hasn't been the same in the ring ever since returning. Like,
no, she's probably never going to be.
Yeah, like,
this was a bad idea. She cannot be 100%. And no. Here she is. And they protect her in mostly tag matches or short matches and four ways. Yeah. As I said, hopefully, if they can get more Mercedes, but it wouldn't even surprise me at all if Mercedes, you know, working them a little bit, as well as trying to needle WWE a little bit, that she does have options and, you know, pay me.
Yeah, to me, yeah. Again, I guess the super cleanup in the women's division, like, I would not really want to be in that mess. It, you know, if I were a Mercedes Moné. It just does not seem like a good situation.
If I was anyone in wrestling right now, I would not want to enter the AEW locker room. If I had a better option. If I could go to WWE, hopefully get a big push, I wouldn't look at AEW right now.
Yeah, because even to me, Britt Baker's coming off a little bit rough these days. Like, she's almost rehashing her old gimmick, and you know, the same stuff.
I think she is for a while. She's not. I don't know if she's necessarily the most versatile of a performer here. She's definitely better as a heel. I don't know exactly what you do. I mean, the Outcast storyline, the storyline where with her and whoever against the Outcasts, you know. Went to crap when Jamie Hayter got hurt, and she really hasn't been, the same since. She's just kind of floating right now.
Yeah, she's like their best woman and most popular woman is just in a bad spot right now. Still, like that, it's that women's division is a real mess. And Saraya is not going to help it at all. So, is there anything else? We kind of talked about them. And I believe my words last week when you and I were recording were... the chances of FTR winning this match went drastically down once this arraignment happened. I will at least say for myself that I did. I did also say that FTR needed this win more. They got this win.
They did get the win, and I think they needed it. Once again, really good match. Not any kind of greatest of all time worthy or anything. but a good match. That kind of no bells and whistles, but on a show like that where there were so many bells and whistles and skewers, it was refreshing.
The matches with less violence were more fun. And this was one of them, They did some of the usual, tag team shenanigans where four people are fighting instead of it being a tag team match.
Yes, but it wasn't as overdone as it was in the trios match before it. That Nearly had Jim Ross throw down his headset in disgust.
Oh my gosh. Also on the list of salty in AEW is one Jim Ross.
Oh, he was salty. Oh my God. Oh, that second match on the show didn't. Damn near was the end of him. Who's legal? Does it matter?
You're catching on, Jim. You're catching on. It does not matter in AEW.
It's only taken him 4 years. And an emotion.
Oh my gosh.
It's just the company, it's again, it just so badly needs an overhaul, and I just don't know if Tony Khan can muster it. I don't know if he even sees, I don't know if he really sees that there's a problem. If he's just tunnel vision watching this from his own 90s, 2000s smart mark mind that this is what he wants to see, so this is what everybody else wants to see. I mean, you can't be looking at these attendance drops and these ratings drops and not feel it. Yeah, but we'll see what they do. I mean, they've got maybe having monthly pay-per-views will help them with focus, at the very least. I guess that's the only red silver lining of that one.
Yeah, I don't know. They need a lot. It is definitely yeah, their matches save them some the saves the product sometime a lot of times, I should say. And because yeah, the story writing has just been truly awful. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I started saying that Tony Khan was starting to get some additional people around him.
It does seem like it seems like he had. It's, I've heard. I've read. Have read something. That there are extra writers, and they're the ones doing like the Adam Cole and MJF skits, and but they're also doing this weird stuff with Jose, whatever the hell. What's their name? What are they called? Andrade's old group. No, he's not really with them anymore. Los Ingobernables?
Yeah.
They're called something else though, aren't they? Is it still Los Ingobernables?
No, I feel like they are doing something else with
I don't remember what it's called. I apologize for that,
it.
but you know,
I don't, because again, they've been abandoned on
whoever they are,
TV too.
they're kidnapping people now. It's a mixed bag. Introducing writers into the mix, and they want to do all the skits, and not everyone is going to be Adam, jump right into it like Adam Cole and MJF and actually be entertaining at it.
Yep. It is quite the mess that's over there at AEW.
But if they can focus it and lead to some character development and some story development, then it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean we kind of joke about it, but they have a big enough roster to get this stuff accomplished.
They do. They should.
You know, to me, there's no reason, and I think that's why it always feels like a reasonable ask. It's just like, come on, man, like you have the staff to do this. Just get your shit together and do it. Like it, yeah, it feels like it's just right there, and it always seems to be eluding Tony Khan anyway. So, yeah, it is definitely frustrating. So yeah, we'll see how Dynamite is tomorrow, and I guess we'll end up talking about at least. I would imagine we will see the numbers for All Out by the time we record next week.
Yeah, we'll see we'll definitely at least see the attendance. We'll get a pretty good idea of the amount of buys, I think, we by that point. And, we'll see what AEW does with their chaotic week that they've had and their chaotic week ahead. Speaking of people who are hopefully not going to have a chaotic week of wrestling-related travel and whatnot, you, me, and Jeremy are headed to Pittsburgh this weekend for Payback.
Yeah, the premium live event coming this Saturday to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I'm definitely looking forward to the trip to Pittsburgh, definitely looking forward to the food, the beer, and just seeing a city I've never been to before, one, of course, that you're very familiar with. And you know what? I knew there would be a drop-off with this being the first pay-per-view, premium live event this year that Roman Reigns and or Brock Lesnar has not appeared on. But man, I think it's going to be a fun show still, you know. We're going to have a good time.
When they started, cuz I really thought that they did a good job of pushing for all that they had, you know, since essentially SmackDown was a Bray Wyatt tribute show. They pushed along some storylines, but for the most part, it was a tribute show, and understandably so.
Right, yes. Yeah, of course.
So, but come Monday, I was maybe two segments in, and I'm like, I already have some idea of what Payback is going to be. And it to kind of contrast with what we were just talking about, I'm like, I feel more knowledgeable about what the card is for Payback than I did for All In, an event that was in front of 80,000 people.
Yeah, no. I mean, they did as good a job as they could do. I mean, once again, I guess it's something I'm going to repeat. They've done what they can do to make Seth Rollins and Shinsuke Nakamura feel like a big deal. You know, they had 4 weeks to get it together. Nakamura's been doing, you know, really some really good work. You know, just with some good video work as it relates to it, letting him speak in Japanese with subtitles. I think it was a great idea.
Yes.
You know, the stuff with the back is at least is interesting. And yeah, you know, they've done a good job with this. It's you do feel like whether it's a Nakamura win or a Priest cash in, Seth Rollins is in danger. This is in danger this Saturday.
Yeah, it would not be entirely surprising to me to see a title change in either man's hands or possibly both man's hands.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think Priest would cash in on Nakamura.
Right.
But you know, so either it's Nakamura wins or Seth wins, but his back is just absolutely destroyed, and then you know,
Damian Priest.
Priest, you would be an idiot not to
cash in. Yeah.
Yeah. So they definitely set some stuff up. I mean, Rhea Ripley's words that if all members of the Judgment Day don't leave Payback with a championship, you know, there's going to be trouble. Then either means Finn and Damian have to win the tag belts, or Priest is going to have it, or only one of the two is leaving with a championship, and it's not going to be Finn.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to get the tag team championships.
I don't think they will, although a Steel City street fight. You know, Kevin and Sammy have all these problems with wrestling the Judgment Day and other people jumping in. So their answer is a match where it's legal for anyone to jump in. and interfere at will.
It does not seem like the wisest course of action.
Yeah, but it once again, it should be a fun little plunder brawl to, you know, at least do something different with Owens and Zayn in the Judgment Day, because they've basically been wrestling just about every week for the last 4 months.
Yes, they have had a lot of appearances against each other.
So yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Make that one the brawl. Once again, yeah, I do think Kevin and Sammy are going to win the title, retain the titles. So once again, we continue the strain between Finn and Priest, and as well as really Finn and the rest of the Judgment Day.
Yeah, them introducing, I was almost
Metalhead.
ready to call him Noam Dar, JD McDonough. I don't know why that happened. They are two vastly different,
Oh, they
large-headed
are.
people. But yeah, JD McDonough is definitely playing a bigger part in this whole situation. Damian Priest definitely does not like him. It certainly seems like Rhea Ripley is, although not explicitly, anti-JD McDonough also. So yeah, I guess I would not be surprised if Judgment Day ends up being a three-person faction moving forward.
Yeah, no, it feels like Finn stays in the factions or numbers. And yes, again, the catalyst being Priest winning the title seems like it would make sense.
Yeah. There's, like you said, anytime I guess a champion has to play up an injury, it makes sense for someone with the Money in the Bank briefcase to take advantage. And they do, I feel like the WWE has done it quite a number of times where you think that the person with the briefcase is down and out because they lost a match earlier in the night.
Yeah.
But then they've ended up cashing in later in the evening also.
Yeah, no, it's their MO.
Yep.
The person it's stupid, but it's their MO.
Yeah, been done before. Again, Triple H, not necessarily that far off the Vince McMahon block. Still happening like that. I guess speaking of one Miss Ripley, we could talk about her match because there were a lot of honestly, there were a lot of vignettes this week that I liked a lot. The Nakamura ones I liked a lot. The Raquel Rodriguez one I liked a lot.
I did like that one. Once again, my new favorite phrase. They're doing all they can with this one.
Oh.
It still wouldn't surprise me if once we get there, the crowd will be majority pro Rhea. Unless Dominic
Oh.
is just being an absolute annoying shit at ringside, which he's going to have to be. He's going to have to turn it off. And, no, once again, no. They've done a good job. The physicality for the two so far has looked good. Raquel does look dominant. And, they're doing everything they can
Oh.
do, as I keep saying. I'm going to stop saying it. But it should be absolutely fine.
Yeah, this is the woman version of a Hoss match.
Yes.
And they've turned it into that. And yeah, I definitely do not expect Raquel Rodriguez to walk away with the championship in any way, shape, or form. So
No,
that
for sure.
still kind of leaves us at, well, yeah, Becky Lynch is her only real opponent.
And, well, we might as well move on. Speaking of Becky Lynch, she has a steel cage match with Trish Stratus to hopefully finally end this story, end this feud. You know what, Ken? Should be a good match. I don't have issues with that. I really enjoyed the Falls Count Anywhere match last night.
I enjoyed that more than I was expecting to.
Yeah, it ended up really good. I mean, obviously there were three very scary bumps to close that match and make it memorable.
That really got my attention more than the rest of the match. Like, that was a real frantic, but storyline wise, like, I was sitting there, I'm like, how does Becky Lynch get out of this thing? And that's a good way to get her out of that situation, a 2-on-1 situation.
Yeah, no. I mean, having Zoe accidentally hit Trish and knock her through the table so that Zoe's alone, so Becky can hit the
Manhandle slam.
manhandle slam through another table.
Yep.
It was really well done. I mean, I mean, I'm pretty sure Trish is done after this. So,
oh.
You know, her and Zoe here can't have a split. And, you know, and that'll be fine. So it's again, having it be because the, you know, miscommunication between the two of them, which, you know, might also be play into the finish on Saturday. All fine and well. Yeah, no, I really like that. I assume I like the cage match, and as long as Trish Stratus's tailbone is okay, because that did look brutal when she hit the Stratus match through a table and her entire ass just hit the floor. She hurt herself more than her opponent, of course.
That looked like a stiff bump on the attacker's part for sure. Oh man. And what? We just have a couple of other matches to talk about here for Payback. And Rey Mysterio versus Austin Theory is one of them.
Well, I'm never excited to see Theory, and this whole thing with the U.S. Championship and how it plays into how I feel about the next match is like we're going to talk about. It's just I don't get it. I don't get why Rey Mysterio had to win the U.S. title. I don't get why Theory's still, you know, getting pushed. It's like give up on the guy or not at this point. Just.
Oh,
push him or get rid of him, or give up on him.
I guess that's the weirdest part to me. I feel like they were finally starting to push Austin Theory, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then, you know, they have this loss happen to him. And it's just like, why? Like, even if you had him wait for Santos Escobar to come back and to get some type of revenge for Rey Mysterio, that would have played better storyline wise, at least. It would have left Theory in a better position.
I mean, I imagine we're building towards Santos turning against Rey. That's kind of pretty much has to be it. But does Rey keep the U.S. title then, or does Theory get it back for, and then that leads to my question and how in transitioning into the next match, why isn't LA Knight already U.S. champion? I don't get it. I enjoy the stuff with him and the Miz a lot, but it feels like LA Knight should have won the U.S. title at SummerSlam.
It almost would have made the banter with him and LA Knight better too, with LA Knight as the champion.
Yeah, I think that there would be something to it too, yes. I think that it just, again, you know, it's like they're pushing LA Knight, but then they're having him lose to Austin Theory on a fluke roll-up just 2 weeks ago. It's like, you can't do that with a guy like LA Knight is getting super over.
Yeah, that's, I'd prefer not to see that happen, but I feel like that still that stuff does happen, and they let it slide even in the WWE.
No. You know, audiences are obviously super into LA Knight, and one loss like that isn't going to hurt it. But they do need to get him on a track to something big, and you know, maybe they're just going to have him bypass the U.S. title and go after Roman, you know, by Rumble time or what have you. He might be a dark horse to win the Royal Rumble and take on Roman at WrestleMania at this point.
Hey, I mean, there's plenty of time between then and now, and it would not completely shock me if that's where we ended up.
Yeah, no, it would not, because you know he's up there with Cody and on a unification deal with Seth, and maybe if they can get. If they can do a solo turn, but I don't see that with Solo yet. I don't see the Batista turn with Solo. I know we mentioned it before, but
oh,
they gotta do more with Solo. I mean, because right now he's playing the Island Savage role, the Barefoot Island Savage role. You know, it's that's fine for a heel heavy, but he'd have to find more of a personality if he's going to go babyface and literally challenge for the championship at a major show, let alone WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little too early for something like that to happen. The year after next, if we're talking 2025, you could talk me into it a lot more than 2024. Because, yeah, he needs some development. He's been, he's been the silent, heavy guy. And that's fine. It's a great role to have. It's good, good introductory role. But you've got to grow from that. And, until WrestleMania does not seem like enough time for me.
Yeah, and then the next announced thing, the Grayson Waller effect with guest Cody Rhodes. We don't even get to see a Cody Rhodes match live.
But we will get to say whoa live, sir.
We will get to say whoa. We will get to say whoa. That's the saving grace of this whole thing. But yeah, they'll do their shtick. It'll get physical. Cody will take him out. Maybe someone will interrupt and they'll. That will be the catalyst for Cody's next feud, but we shall see. And then from there, we've still got SmackDown on Friday, which you, me, and Jeremy will not be watching.
No.
Whatever happens there with the return of John Cena, we'll have to hear about it later. I guess the question is, do you think something will happen involving John Cena and SmackDown that will lead to him appearing at and maybe even wrestling at Payback?
It is definitely conceivable that that will happen. I find it hard that he would decide to go to Hershey and not make his way across the Commonwealth to come to Pittsburgh. He doesn't have
really
anything.
Has nothing else going on in his life right now, and he has committed to a 9-week schedule at this point through the end of October.
I believe so.
In the next 2 months.
Yep, John Cena still wants to make some money, kids.
Yes, John Cena still wants to do some acting.
he has a fallback job here. He's got a. Who else is going to pay for these mansions that he has? Come on. Can't just sit there and do nothing. Jeez. I guess I do think that he will end up being on the card. Like, it would seem weird to me that you do the small venue and not the larger venue.
Yeah.
And there's enough there that you... Yeah, I mean, it's a John Cena match. Even if it's a squash match, it's a John Cena match.
Yeah.
I don't know who you have it against necessarily, but whatever.
It doesn't matter. The pick would be Grayson Waller, but he's already got his own thing.
Because Cody Rhodes and him have their beef set up. I don't know who else could be a sucker for such a thing. I was going to say, I guess Austin Theory would be another good name, but he's also tied up.
Yeah. And you imagine that on this short run Cena's going to go on, he's going to need to pick up some wins. So the next time somebody beats him, it means something.
I would. That's the one reason why I think it could be kind of a lower card kind of person that ends up... being the one that takes on Cena and he gets an easy win and we're in, out, and on to the next match so that it doesn't eat into the runtime too much.
And of course, we had one more disappointment that the Gunther-Chad Gable rematch will not be taking place in Pittsburgh. It will be taking place next Monday night from Charlotte, North Carolina, where Jeremy Mays will be in attendance for that too. So Jeremy doesn't lose. We lose, but Jeremy does not.
Yeah. So we getting a little hosed in that department.
Yeah. But Jeremy is such a Gunther mark, and I'm still feeling they're going to cut him off right at the end here.
It would be really interesting if they decide to cut him off at the knees this close to the record.
Well, it wouldn't be. Well, yeah. But you know what? It would be a beautiful, really great moment. You know, you really put over someone who needs it and deserves it. It's not like Gunther, one loss is going to, you know, kill Gunther for good or anything. So,
oh,
I am 100% in support of it. I am glad, as I said, I did not buy a Chad Gable shirt to wear to Payback on Saturday.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that one's a little bit of a bummer that's not taking place at Payback, just because I will not also be in Charlotte, North Carolina to watch said match. Because Gunther's been a lot of fun. Chad Gable's been a lot of fun. Yeah, it's been a good feud. It's disappointing that that will definitely not take place there. So, anything else to talk about before we head on out of here, sir?
No, I think we're good.
Bell Time Beer for the show from Lexington, Kentucky. Mirror Twin Brewing, Phantom of the Guava, Sour New England IPA with, you guessed it, guava. It is a very tasty summer beer. Not terribly, the hops just kind of blend in with the citrusy flavor of the guava. And yeah, their motto is one-of-a-kind beers for one-of-a-kind people. And yep, definitely think of myself that way. So very tasty beer. Should you happen to wander down to Lexington, Kentucky, or Kentucky in general, take a look out for Mirror Twin Brewing. Their beer is exceptional. So that is the Bell Time Beer of the Show from Matt DeFrango 11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Google, iHeartRadio, or Spotify. Have a good night, grandkids.